On Wednesday, February 27, 2019, my dad, Dr. Anthony M. Capone, was interviewed by Edna Sussman, reference librarian and Veterans Testimonial Project director. My dad, along with other United States veterans, had the opportunity to share his military experiences so future generations will know his story. I take this opportunity to include this interview as part of my Life Stories conversations that are included in the Spoilers Alerts podcast. Thank you to Mrs. Sussman for agreeing to allow me to share his story on Anchor, and of course, to my dad for sharing his amazing experiences and life lessons. I think you'll see why we are all so proud of him.
Today is Wednesday, February 27th, 2019. My name is Edna Sussman. I'm a reference librarian here at the Half Hollow Hills Community Library. We're interviewing Dr. Anthony M. Capone, a World War II Army veteran, as part of our Veterans Testimonial Project and in collaboration with the Library of Congress's Veterans History Project. Thank you so much, Dr. Capone, for your service and for participating in our project today. Dr. Capone, where and when were you born?
I was born in Brooklyn, 1927.
And who were your parents, their names and occupations?
My father was a life insurance office manager, and my mother was a homemaker with four children.
Wow. And what were their names?
Well, I was the oldest, the boy, and then three girls. Anne, Marie, and who?
Joanne.
And Joanne.
Joanne. And your parents' names?
My father's name was Jerome, and my mother's name was Helen.
Okay.
My father, when he came as a boy of 15, and he had to stop at the
Ellis Island. Where did he come from?
From Sicily.
Ah.
And he was 15.
Wow.
He spoke no English, and they said, "What is your name?" And he said, "Girolamo." And they said, "What? Say it again. Girolamo." And the men at the table there couldn't make out what it is. So one of them says, "Sounds like Jerome to me."
You're kidding.
And that's the name that has grown up.
Wow.
My son was named after him, and he's now Jerome Capone.
Wow, that's funny. Did he come by himself?
Yes. Mm. The parents, poor economic conditions in Sicily, where they came from, where he came from, and they arranged with the family friends who lived in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. And there, when he came, he found a job as in construction.
At 15?
Yes. So he worked for whatever time, a brief period. And one day he was walking along the street in Brooklyn, Bay Ridge, 86th Street and 5th Avenue, I think. And he saw a sign that said, "Salesman Wanted." So he went up, he got a job. In 1 year, he was assistant manager. The second year, he was manager of the office.
And he was still a teenager.
Well,
almost.
Whatever, 17, yeah. 18, whatever.
Wow.
And he eventually got a high administrative position in the company.
That's an interesting story.
Yeah.
So did any of your siblings also serve in the military?
None. I have three sisters.
Right.
And none of them served.
So what were you doing before you entered the service?
I had graduated high school at 17, and I started college at Columbia. They had, during the war, they had triple sessions during the year,
okay.
Because so many men were away and trying to get ready to leave. So I was at Columbia, and I got in, you know, several semesters before got into the service.
Well, and then did you enlisted?
I was drafted. At 18.
Mm-hmm. What year was that?
1945.
45,
yes.
Uh-huh. And that was into the Army. You didn't have a choice, right?
I didn't have a choice, but it was the Army.
So
after basic training, we were transported to Staten Island.
Well, before that, so where was basic training?
In Maryland.
Fort something.
I can't remember.
Okay, that's fine. And so how long was the training, basic training?
Oh, eight or 9 weeks, that's
okay.
It.
Okay, and then after basic training, did you have additional training?
No, we went to Staten Island.
Okay.
And we got on a ship. We all thought we were going to Germany. They had issued us heavier clothing and so on. But no, we got on this ship at Staten Island, a big troop ship, and it came out and turned south all the way down, and we went through the Panama Canal. Many people, as I did, conceive of the canal as you just go in and come out the other side. No, you go in, the ship gets locked in a confined area, mm-hmm. and they pump water in, the ship goes up.
Oh, it's a lock.
Lock, and then it goes, the next one goes up, and I think two or three times before it reaches a lake in the middle of Panama Canal.
Oh.
There's a lake, and then we sailed across, and then did the reverse. And a lock thing, down, open up, go to the next one, down again, and finally even with the level of the Pacific Ocean.
Oh, okay. So you ended up at the Pacific Ocean.
Right.
And then?
And then nonstop from Panama Canal, nonstop past the Hawaiian Islands to the Philippines.
How long did all that take?
It took about 32 days, the whole thing.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. How many, all military on the ship?
Yes.
Do you know about how many?
I don't
large
know.
Large transport?
Well, yeah. A whole bunch of guys.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow. So it was like a month. You were on the ship.
Yeah.
So, do you recall any of your instructors from basic training before you landed on the ship? What were they like?
Well, they were good. They were conscientious about their responsibilities. Mm-hmm. For example, we had in the barracks, we had to make our beds, and it was a sheet, it was a cot, mm-hmm. spring cotton, and the blanket had to be tight and firm around the bed, the mattress and so on, the pillows and so on. And the inspection consisted of the officer coming in and throwing a coin on the bed, and it had to bounce. If it hadn't been tight enough, it was not acceptable.
Wow.
So very firm, he'd throw a coin on the thing. I'd never heard of that before.
But so was that hard to do? I mean,
we knew it was going to happen, just have to do it.
That's good. So after the basic training, you went on ship to the Philippines, and then you stayed in the Philippines?
In the Philippines, through the Panama Canal, landed there. And we were waiting to be deployed. And over the loudspeaker, it said, Private Capone, report to headquarters company immediately. Oh. And the guys that are on the ship with, I won't use the word, Capone, what the F did you do? I said, I didn't do anything. I've been with you guys. I have no idea. So I reported, sit down, soldier. You've been to college? I said, well, I graduated high school at 17, and they were doing triple sessions during the war. So I had been accepted to Columbia, and I attended classes and I got 3 or 4 semesters of work in. Mm-hmm. Did you have biology? Yes. Chemistry? Yes. Math? Yes. We need a medic in a MASH unit.
Oh, you're kidding.
You want to be a medic? Oh. I said, sure.
Oh, wow.
He said, get your gear, come back in 10 minutes.
Wow.
So I went back and the guy said, what happened? Where are you going? I have to go. I are a medic.
Wow.
So we got on a 6x truck, you know, it has the canvas over, okay. And we had a rifle. Even though Japan had just surrendered, many Japanese soldiers refused to accept the surrender. And so we went, we had our rifles, and drove for about an hour and a half into the jungle somewhere. Mm-hmm. And we passed caribou, rice paddies, thatched houses on stilts with naked kids, you
really?
Know, and just, and so finally we came to a clearing, and it was, there was a doctor and 7 or 8,
nurses or beds or
us?
Yeah. Oh, military personnel.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And not interns. I can't think of the
residents.
Word.
Residents. No. Medics.
Medics. Thank you, sweetheart. medics.
Was there like a building? Was it like a hospital or?
Yes, it was a building. Mm-hmm. I mean, not.
Like
not stone or anything, just
like a tent building.
Tent kind of thing. So show the soldier where's them bunking. So there's a platform two feet above ground, a wooden platform, and it had a wooden frame around the cot. And it had screen because at night when you slept, you had to roll down the
screen?
The
netting.
Netting, thank you. And you had to tuck it in, otherwise, because it happened one night, I wasn't aware of it. The insects bit your lips, nose, eyes, puffed, everything.
Ew.
And I had to get, they gave me a shot of adrenaline.
Wow.
And
did they have shots at that time, like malaria and things like that, before you left? Did you get, do you remember if you got?
I don't remember.
Yeah.
Well, so after that, I knew enough to put the mesh around the bed and so on. And then report. So I reported to a mesh unit. There was a doctor and then the, what's the word I'm looking for?
Medics.
Medics. And there was a line of 10 soldiers. And they said, we need the test tube of blood from each one of these soldiers. They have gonorrhea and, you know, all kinds of sex-related diseases. I said, I'm sorry, sir. I've never done that. That's why I'm doing in the first one. You finish the line. Mm. The second guy went,
Oh, my God. They didn't show you any of this? Why didn't they have, little training after basic?
I'm telling you exactly the way it worked.
Wow.
The way it occurred. Mm. He did the first one, and he left, and he gave me the, and I had a set of needles, and so I did the first one, and I missed the vein, and I pulled it out, and he got a big bean on his arm there. And one of the other medics came over. He said, when you miss the vein, do not pull out the
needle.
He said, always keep it under the skin, otherwise you can get the bean. So I finished that one, and by the end of the line, I was an expert.
Wow, unbelievable. And you were okay with the blood and all that?
Yeah.
That's a very admirable. Wow.
But one night, two nights, every week or two, you would get night duty. And we had a manual alarm clock. You had to wind it up, and we had to set it, like, for every 2 hours to give the soldiers that were there antibiotics because they had venereal disease.
Oh, wow.
And we used to have to bend down, pull your pants down, and inject them in their rear end.
Wow.
And so we had to do that.
Wow. Were there?
And one night, they brought in a soldier who had a big gash on his head. You could see the skull, you know.
Ooh.
And so I went to the captain, who was sleeping. It was to whatever time it was in the morning, during the night. And I told him, what the F are you waking me up for? You seen us do it? You do it, and don't ever wake me up again.
You're kidding. Oh, my God.
So I went back, and I sutured his wound.
Had you ever done that before?
No, but I had observed it, so I did what was called then a mattress stitch with forceps, and then tie it without touching them. Tie it, and then sit, and then doing a next one. It was a mattress stitch.
Okay.
And
was
I did
he
it.
Conscious, the soldier? Was
sure.
He, really?
You know.
You didn't have to knock him out?
No.
Oh.
So.
Well, that's amazing. And after that, you, well, this is down the road, but you didn't want to go into the medical field after.
No.
You didn't. Wow. How was it adapting to military life? You know, the physical regimen and the barracks and the food. How was that for you?
It was fine. It just, whatever it was, and that's all. And you were with the guys, you know, there was a little horseplay, mm-hmm. getting around or eating, hungry or whatever.
How was the food?
The food was acceptable.
I mean, so. They had a kitchen there, right?
Yes.
It was a base. You were on an American base.
Yes.
Yeah. So was there any kind of social life there? When you were off duty, what did you do?
Well, I recall that once we were able to get permission and so on to go into Manila, because we were not stationed in Manila, we were stationed...
Just outside?
Well, about an hour or so away. So, and walked around. People were very nice, very... I use the word lovely, but you know,
warm, welcoming,
warm. Thank you.
So they were happy the Americans were there.
Yeah, they were very nice. Mm-hmm. So that was.
So, what other memories do you have of your experience abroad there? Did you spend the whole 2 years in the service in the Philippines?
Well, it was a little less. It was less than 2 years, thanks to Harry Truman, who dropped the bomb, mm-hmm. and then the second one, and Japan surrendered. And
you said you arrived in the Philippines. Japan had already surrendered? Was it 40?
Yes, but there were many Japanese soldiers who refused to accept. So we had military around us. Hmm. And
it was still kind of dangerous, huh?
Well, it was. You know, one particular occasion I had to go with my rifle, the driver, and so on. We went down. There was a body down at the water's edge somewhere. So I had to pick him up. We wrapped up the body and so on, put him in the ambulance, and we drove back.
Was that an American, or who was it?
It was an American, and it was in a suit, a business suit. Mm. And we don't know if he was, I don't know, CIA or some...
Oh.
Whatever.
But he was already gone.
He was dead, yes, yes.
Wow.
So we brought him back.
Nobody knew how that happened? Had he been shot? Or?
Well, I just brought him back, and then the officers took care of that.
What kind of friendships and camaraderie did you form while you were in the service?
Friendly. Everybody was... You know, going through the same thing, kind of thing, away from family and so on. And I had one friend in particular who was good, John Zwanzik, and we used to tease his name, D DZWONCZYK.
Well, that's a hard one.
It's Wonsick.
It's Wonsick.
And we maintained communication. He lived in Philadelphia area.
Well, after you got back?
After we got back.
Really?
And then he passed away. Mm-hmm. So that was that.
So your duties the whole time you were in the Philippines was working in the MASH unit there?
Yes.
Yeah. Did you have to travel, or was this a stationary base?
No, stationary, and then we had armed guards around the facility because of the Japanese soldiers. So they were after trying to steal an ambulance or
really?
Tires or,
oh, wow.
You know, whatever.
So sometimes was there any kind of, not a battle, but there was, your people on the base had to...
We had to be alert.
Alert and get them to go away? I mean, how does that work?
We had a Filipino nurse. I can't remember her name, Dr. Inez Magapanpan. She came to treat the Filipino youngsters, teenagers, 20-year-olds, mm-hmm. who worked on the base for us. And she asked the captain one day if she could borrow an ambulance to take some medication to treat some Filipino things who were having some medical issues. Mm-hmm. So he said yes. She says, I'll need a driver. Take Capone.
Oh, really? Why? You're multi-talented. Wow.
Well, I had to drive the ambulance. We had rifles with us and so on. And
was it just you and her together?
Yes.
So what about protection? Well, I guess you have your own rifle, and that was it.
I had
it.
My rifle. I also felt, to some degree, safe because she was Filipino.
Oh, good point, yeah.
Doctor and mm-hmm. a professional, very well-educated, mm-hmm. and so on.
Did anything happen?
No, we traveled to, dirt roads, as I said. We passed shacks on stilts, naked kids, mm-hmm. and caribous, as I told you. Mm-hmm. And she brought the medical things that she had to carry out and so on. And then we came back.
So the Filipinos weren't treated in the MASH unit? The doctor would go to them?
Yes.
Hmm.
It was
nice.
For soldiers.
Yeah. Oh, for what?
For soldiers, for the Army.
Right, but you said she treated some of the kids there.
Oh, she treated the Filipinos,
right.
who worked the...
Oh, because they worked in the unit.
Yeah, they worked the grounds, they cleaned up,
Mm-hmm. So they got medical care from the MASH
her.
Unit. Okay.
As a matter of fact, after I was discharged and home... She came to visit me and my family.
Oh, how nice. Well, you said she was Filipino.
Yes.
Did she stay there and then she came to the States to visit?
For whatever reason.
Oh,
I don't know. She
nice.
Had her own person. Dr. Inez Magapanpan.
That's quite a name. Nice. So how did you keep in touch with your family and friends from back home?
Well, we had no cell phones or
right.
anything, so it was by mail. And
you wrote, they wrote?
I wrote, and they wrote, mm-hmm. yeah.
And when you were off duty, what did you said you went into Manila sometimes?
Yeah, not often, once, or I remember once particularly, mm-hmm. but other than that, just on the compound.
So you didn't travel off the away from the Philippines at all?
No.
So the war had ended when you were sent over there, but they didn't tell you what your assignment was going to be? I mean, they had you go to the MASH unit right away, and that was...
When I got there, they said, have you've been to college? Yes. And I said, yeah. Did you have biology? Yes. And said, we need a medic. Would you like to be a medic? Sure.
Did anybody else from your training group have the same assignment?
No, not that I remember.
Huh. So what other experiences did you have in the Philippines working there? What other duties did you have to do?
Well, one was to be alert because, as I said, the Japanese soldiers refused to recognize or acknowledge surrender.
How close did they get to the hospital?
Well, they were in a compound. You know, there was a building, a car, you know. We had lived in a cot, and it had a metal, wooden frame. I told you.
Right. But I mean, the periphery of the base had a fence around it? Or you had people stationed to guard it?
Stationed to guard, yeah. We had soldiers.
Did you ever see Japanese getting close to the unit?
Only to the extent that things were stolen and we'd hear gunshots once in a while.
Really?
And as I told you, I went to pick up a body and so on. So I was fortunate enough to be born in the year that I was rather than a little earlier.
Earlier, right,
yeah.
Right. So when your duty was over, how did you return to home? Or did you get the option to re...
Oh, yeah. Well, you had to meet with the officer, and you tried in every which way to re-up.
Really? But you didn't want to.
And no. I told him I had started school, and I wanted to finish, and so on. And I got on a ship, and it came from the Philippines, and the ship came back to Fort Ord in California. Mm-hmm. And it was discharged there.
Oh.
And they gave me $168 to get home.
On your own? I mean, you had
on
to make
own.
The arrangement?
I was discharged right
wow.
there.
Wow.
So I had never been on an airplane before, but I and another couple of guys, you know, we got reservations on an airplane that left from California to New York,
mm-hmm.
two-propeller plane.
Really?
No, seven stops. Seven stops.
Wow. Across the country, you kept stopping.
One stop was a place I had never heard of, Ypsilanti, Michigan.
Oh, I've heard of Ypsilanti.
Have you?
Yeah.
It begins with the letter Y.
Yeah.
Ypsilanti, Michigan. And then we're getting close to New York. It stopped in Philadelphia first, right away.
Wow.
So
you always
close.
Stayed on the plane. You didn't
yes.
change planes.
Yeah, no.
Wow.
And finally, we landed in New York.
Now, did your family know you were on your way home?
Yes.
Yeah, they did.
Yes. And I went to the PX at Fort Hamilton in Brooklyn the next day or two, I forget what. I was still in military.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought civilian clothes there.
Oh, okay.
They had a post exchange and
mm-hmm.
so on. And
how were you received by family and friends when you got home?
Are you kidding? My mother and father, you know, they were happy. My sister,
yeah.
I had three sisters.
So at that point you were 21 or 20?
Yeah.
20?
20, 21.
So did Columbia, you returned to school?
I went right back and I graduated. I got my degree the year that I had started out with. Don't ask me how I did it.
What do you mean? You got your degree. How much longer did it take to get?
I graduated with the class of 1948. I graduated high school in 1944, entered Columbia.
Wow.
I was supposed to graduate 1948, instead went overseas, back again, and I graduated with my class.
So you were in school again for only like a year?
Yeah, and I took triple sessions.
Oh, I see.
You know, a lot of credits in one semester and so on.
Wow. So what were you studying? You had a major?
I had a major. At first I thought it was going to be medicine. But I switched. A friend of mine was told me that he was going to teacher's college at Columbia. So I got my master's, my bachelor's at Columbia, my
master's?
It's a master's and my EDD, a doctorate, at Teachers College, Columbia.
Wow, nice. Very nice.
So I did that, and I got a job, and I started teaching.
Where was that?
In West Babylon.
West Babylon, Long Island.
Long Island. Huh. And I became junior high principal, assistant superintendent,
wow.
and so on.
And then full superintendent after?
I did, but temporarily, because the superintendent got sick.
Mm.
And I did, and I told him I was retiring. My wife contracted MS.
Oh.
And she kept calling, what are you doing? Don't they know I need you? And so on. I had to call my neighbor to pick me up. I fell.
Oh.
So I said, that's it. I retired.
Retired.
Early, mm-hmm. at an early age, mm-hmm. and came home. I found out after a year that I was not knowledgeable enough to take care of her needs,
mm-hmm.
With the MS. And so we got an aide
help.
To live
mm-hmm.
with us and
mm-hmm.
so on.
Nice.
And eventually she ended up in a nursing home.
Oh, sorry. What made you decide not to do medicine after your stint in the MASH unit?
I don't know. I think about it, but I don't know.
Or rather go into education instead. That's a big difference
yeah.
from medicine.
But I enjoyed the education. I liked being in front of a class.
Mm-hmm.
With the kids, I was had a very nice relationship with family and
mm-hmm.
parents.
Mm-hmm. Where did you start out in what grade, what level teaching?
I started with this in science.
In high school?
High school, junior high,
junior
high.
High
school.
Oh, okay.
And
physics
too.
And then I taught. The superintendent called me up. I had become chairman of the science department by that time. And he had hired a physicist from the NASA program, and he kept bragging about it to all the other superintendents. What he didn't know is the guy didn't know the first thing about teaching. He would go to the blackboard writing, looking at the blackboard writing, and the kids were climbing out the window. It was chaos.
Yeah.
So he had to fire him. And he said, Tony, he said, you're going to have to teach physics. I said, Pete, Tony, where am I going to find a physics teacher 3 months into the semester? So I didn't. I taught it for 3 years.
Wow. Did you like it?
I liked it. And the students, I had them in biology.
Oh.
So they knew me. And
nice.
It was good relationship with them and their families.
Before that, how were you adjusting to civilian life once you came back? You went right back into college, so it was a little different.
A little different.
You weren't working right away.
Yeah, the family was happy to see me.
Yeah. And you lived at home.
Neighbors
or?
Lived at home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Puggy.
My friend Puggy. We had grown up together. We were good friends, but he was sent to Germany, and I was sent to the Philippines. But we came home at the same time.
Really?
The semesters, we still had to finish our degrees at college. He was at NYU. I was at Columbia. And so we still had about 3 or 4 months
mm-hmm.
before we could pick up a class again. So we used to meet at his aunt's house. She was a young woman with little kids and very personable
mm-hmm.
and happy to associate with young
students,
people,
yeah,
students.
Sure.
And so on.
Nice.
So we'd go there, drink coffee, smoke cigarettes.
You smoked?
Well, the Red Cross used to give us cigarettes.
Amazing. Really? As soldiers?
Do you know that? Yeah, as soldiers.
I did not know that, no.
We used to get two-pack, just like this shape
mm-hmm.
out of cardboard. And there'd be two cigarettes in there. And the Red Cross used to hand them out to the soldiers.
Well, everyone smoked back then, it seemed, you know.
Yeah.
That's what people did to relax,
yeah.
I guess.
I can tell you when I stopped smoking.
Oh, yeah? When was that?
Well, I had 4 children, and we were having supper. We always ate together. And the oldest was Jerry, Tom,
Susan,
and Linda.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife, while we were having supper at the table, all of us, he said, I have news for you. Your son was sent home from school for smoking. Mm-hmm. It was Jerry.
How old was he then?
About well, a high school student. What was he, 16? Huh?
16,
17. 17, something like that. Your son, not our son. Your son was... I said, what's the matter with you? You're stupid. He said, Dad, you're holding a cigarette in your hand while you're telling me that. Mom is smoking.
Oh, she smoked also, your wife?
Yeah. And your ashtray's on the table. I said, you see this cigarette? This is exactly what happened. See this cigarette? It's the last one I will ever smoke.
Wow.
And you'd better not smoke anymore. And I put it out.
Good for you. Wow.
And I held to it. The next couple of days, you know, it's crises hard. In school, yeah. I would have lit a cigarette. But I stuck to it.
Did your wife stop too at that point?
Virtually. Uh-huh. But she had MS. I didn't want to force her to...
Yeah. But your son
she gave up smoking.
And your son didn't smoke anymore.
Nobody smoked.
Good.
Unless they're not telling me.
That's good.
No smoking.
So you said you remained in contact with the friend.
Well, one of them.
One of them.
And who lived in Philadelphia, but he's since passed away.
Are you a member of any veterans organizations?
I am not, no.
How do you think your wartime experiences affected your life, your military service affected your life?
Well, resilience, self-reliance.
Discipline be with the
discipline,
bed.
Discipline, huh?
Making the bed.
Making the bed.
Discipline.
I still make the bed every morning when I get up.
That's very important. That's excellent.
Am I right?
That's excellent. So what are some life lessons you learned from your military service?
Life lessons? Well, as I said, self-reliance, mm-hmm. Believing in yourself and being... I don't know.
Okay. How do you think your military service impacted your feelings about war and the military in general?
Oh. I respect and admire the men and women who are in the military very much. They have great responsibilities and so on.
Mm-hmm.
What do I feel about war? No war. Please.
Yeah.
Enough.
Is there anything about your service we haven't covered that you remember that we should hear about?
No, I'm not happy that situations, you know, require that I get into the military, but it contributed to the person I am today.
Mm-hmm. In a good way.
Yes.
What is there a message you'd like to leave for future generations who might view this video? Any message?
No war.
That's a good message. Okay. Thank you so much, Dr. Capone. Anything else? We're good?
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your service and sharing your memories with us.
Thank you.
Good. We're good. Thank you.
Really?
That was great. Yeah. You were terrific.
All right.
Wow. Yes. Well done.
Well done.
No, I can. Yes.